We now continue with Bob Reynolds Might Still Be Alive.
In August, Jane Reynolds Howard continued her quest. She left Wisconsin and headed for Russia. She arrived in Moscow on the first year anniversary of the failed coup attempt against Mikhail Gorbachev. The end of the Cold War had opened new doors to the former Soviet Union, and possibly some answers to what happened to Bob Reynolds. She traveled with her daughter Carolyn and Susan Messenai of the ARC Project. They were met at the airport by Boris Yuzin. Oh, Jane and Carolyn found an apartment to rent on the outskirts of Moscow.
We're the first American women to come over here, you know, in search of her father and my first husband.
Bob Reynolds' fate has several possibilities. He was killed in the crash. He survived the crash, only to die years later in a prison camp. He survived the crash and a prison sentence for espionage and was released into Russian society. If Reynolds did survive a prison sentence, he may have remarried, maybe even had another family.
I'm hoping that's what might have happened for Bob, you know, that he had a little bit of happiness and family life and a good woman, and that would be wonderful as far as we're concerned. But I think Carolyn wants to know if she has any brothers or sisters over here.
I've been told a few weeks ago it was real difficult for me to believe that someone could have survived, you know, for so many years, especially my father that I spent all my life thinking was dead, and all of a sudden this whole thing comes up in the last year or so. And my tendency until a few weeks ago was to think that we would probably eventually find out where he was buried if we were lucky.
But news stories about two American citizens who were caught in Soviet-occupied territory after World War II and were forced to stay on Soviet land changed Carolyn's mind.
So when I saw that, I just started crying, because for the first time I was able to conceive that maybe my father did survive and maybe he is alive someplace out there. Because he would be 70, these two guys were 75. So I guess it's possible, you know, miracles do happen.
Jane Reynolds Howard came to Russia for three reasons. To find Bob Reynolds, to represent other POW MIA families, and to help heal the wounds between two nations. She says that people are a better resource than archives. She wants to appeal directly to the Russian people. Ask them to come forward and tell what they know about American POW MIAs in the former Soviet Union.
And I hope the publicity that I get here will have the effect of helping those people in the culture that are hesitant either about saying what they know or revealing what they are aware exists in the archives, because for some reason they think it is not to their best interest. I want people to know that this is not something that's going to go away.
In a quiet moment, Carolyn tries to explain to producer Steve Jandasek what it's like to believe one thing for 42 years. That her father is dead, only to have to rethink that belief today.
It's confusing to say the least. And it's not easy for me to talk about. And I go through various emotions at different times. Sometimes I'm sad about it. Sometimes I'm hopeful about it. Sometimes I get angry. Sometimes I just get plain confused, anxious. At times it's agonizing. It's hard to describe. I mean, to have thought all my life that my father was dead was one thing. It was difficult enough to not have had a chance to meet him. And then all of a sudden in the last few months to find out that he could be alive, and if he is, God knows in what condition, hopefully good, it's hard for me to accept that. It's difficult. Well, half of me comes from him, so I'm genetically linked to him. I'm emotionally linked to him since he is my father, yet I have no conscious picture of him. So growing up, I fantasized a lot about what he would be like or whether I was like him, and every once in a while my mother would mention a trait of mine or something about my personality, my character that would remind her of him, yet I didn't have him there to mirror, so it was, you know, it was difficult to know that. All I had were pictures and words.
Early in her stay in Russia, Jane Reynolds Howard sits down with Susan Messenai and Boris Yuzin of the ARC project to plan their activities.
I called the man who is ready to interview it, so it could be done any time. It depends on your schedule here.
Before she left the United States, Reynolds Howard received several other case histories of American POW MIAs from their families. Again, her quest for her husband expands to include other POW MIA cases. Some of these are Vietnam MIAs who may have been transferred to the Soviet Union. These she shares with the ARC project.
This is Joe Matadoff, who was shot down in Laos after the Paris Peace Accords.
Who's the gentleman?
He was shot down with Pressman. He was on the same plane.
Her search includes others, but she wants to know if Yuzin has any new information about Bob Reynolds at Sechevka, the psychiatric hospital where her husband had been sighted.
May I ask at this point, what did happen when you went over to Sechevka?
Well, what we found, Igor Privalov informed us that Bob was in Sechevka in 1957 or 58. Mm-hmm. So I personally checked all the files, and they keep the files only starting from 1979. All other just mysteriously disappeared.
Everything before 79
yes,
disappeared?
Yes, all personal files.
There are three different kinds of prison documents at Sechevka, according to Boris Yuzin, who himself is a former prisoner of the Soviet Gulag system. History of illness, personal files, and prisoner cards. He says there are no personal files before 1979 at the psychiatric hospital. There are prisoner cards from the beginning, but...
I couldn't find your father's name.
But the hospital records are confusing. The nationalities of some of the patients appear to have been changed. And there are some strange names, some that sound like Reynolds.
Well, again, you have to understand that even they keep the file on your father, your mm-hmm. husband, it doesn't mean that it is his real name on the file. Mm-hmm. Plus, it doesn't mean that nationality is an American.
How much can you trust that?
Well, what I want to say that we cannot trust only the archives.
Yeah, I know
that. Well, and for us, it's more important to have some eyewitnesses.
Can we go visit the prison or the psychiatric hospital?
You can go and can visit. I think it could be arranged.
The conversation moves around to Igor Privalov, the source of the information that Reynolds was at Sechevka. Privalov's information is secondhand. He didn't talk with Reynolds. Someone else did. Is Privalov lying?
I also trust him, and I believe that he's telling the truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Okay. As long as you feel that, that's.
But you
that's
know
what
happened when we brought Igor to Senators Kerry and Smith, mm-hmm. they didn't trust him.
I know that.
They humiliated him.
Yeah, they humiliated him.
Well, I just definitely want to meet with Igor. I don't know whether it's convenient to go to his home or not.
Before Yuzin brought Senators Kerry and Smith to talk with Provalov, he checked out his competence and found Provalov to be a reliable witness.
The only problem that this is not first-hand information, but definitely Provalov was not lying.
The next day, Jane Reynolds Howard meets Igor Provalov. Provalov attended dissident meetings in Moscow at an early age.
I know that it took a great deal of moral courage to come forward under circumstances like he did and be so outspoken and clear about what he knew.
Provalov has been in and out of Russian psychiatric hospitals since he was 12 years old. The first time was in 1963. After he tried to leave the Soviet Union illegally through Norway. But the Norwegians returned him to Soviet authorities, and they put him in a psychiatric clinic for children. Since then, he has been placed in psychiatric hospitals 6 more times. He says it's better to be in a prison camp than a psychiatric hospital.
When you are sent to the concentration camp, a person has a chance to leave the concentration camp healthy and alive. When they're being sent to the psychiatric hospital,
человек отнюдь не уверен, что он вернется оттуда живым.
Person cannot be sure that he would be alive after the treatment.
Или вернется в таком состоянии, что лучше бы и не возвращаться.
Probably he would wish he were dead.
Provalov is the key to Jane Reynolds Howard's belief that her husband might still be alive. He is the one who answered the ad in the Russian newspaper. He says that he had a cellmate by the name of Alexander. Alexander told him that he once shared a cell with an American pilot named Reynolds, and that the KGB tried to recruit Reynolds for espionage, but he refused.
He didn't know your husband personally, but according to the talk of his friend, he wants to tell you that your husband was a real man. A real soldier and very brave person, the real American.
Его не смогли сломать.
They were not able to make him change his mind. Yeah, and his...
Yeah. Ask him how long Mr. Alexander was with Bob.
Как долго мистер Александр был с Бобом? День, месяц?
Нет, они были всего где-то около недели.
A week.
Дело в том, что они попали туда совершенно случайно. Это была, видимо, чья-то непозволительная оплошность. Но они случаются...
Вместе получились,
да?
Да, да, да. He's saying that the fact that they were put in one, let's say, room or cell, yes, that was a mistake on somebody's part. They were not supposed to do it, to put an American and Russian person together. So...
According to Provalov, as soon as the mistake was realized, Alexander was sent away. Reynolds stayed at Sechevka.
He wants to make a point that is that Suchevka special psychiatric hospital was a real special hospital.
Yeah, I know.
It was meant to isolate the person from the world and nobody was
ever to know about them.
Alexander told Provalov about Reynolds in the late 70s. Alexander is now probably dead. Provalov says most people don't survive long periods in psychiatric hospitals.
What about my father? Could he still be alive there?
А как вы думаете, ее отец может быть жив? В принципе, есть такая или нет?
В принципе, всегда такая надежда есть. Хоть один шанс из тысячи, но существует.
There is always a hope, but it could be like one chance in a thousand.
But the way things are coming out bit by bit by bit, it doesn't diminish my hope at all. Tell him, please, that I apologize for the way in which Senator Kerry treated him.
Он извиняется за то, как сенатор Керри с вами обошелся.
Вы знаете, о ком речь, да?
Да, ну, извинения излишние. Я, признаться, тоже во мне все заклокотало тогда, но...
You don't need to do it. He understands.
No, but... Я понимал, что ссориться глупо.
He understands it was no point to quarrel with the senator.
Сейчас все расширяется и расширяется. И не стоит придавать этому сколько-нибудь серьезное значение.
He's saying he doesn't take this censor as the representative of the whole nation. Everybody has the drawbacks. He understands that.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the reasons, I mean, when we have people with that level of insensitivity who are in positions of authority and power, and specifically in the area of the POW-MIA situation, because this particular senator is the head of the Senate Select Committee on POW-MIA Affairs, and he is also one of the two senators on the Joint Russian-American Commission. Mm-hmm. So when you hear a person like that make a statement of that kind, you know then that they are not truly sensitive to finding live Americans over here.
Her displeasure with Senator Kerry is a reflection of what many POW-MIA families feel about what they regard as a general policy on the part of government officials to debunk or dismiss live sighting reports and to give more weight to archive or paper trails.
He is saying that you are correct, but he wants to add another thing about the senator. If he wants to work with paper here, he was doomed to fail because now, and he has a proof for that, a lot of papers were destroyed and are being destroyed.
Yes, I know.
There is no way to find out truth dealing only with paper. He is saying that if somebody wanted to hide a person so nobody would be able to find him, the best place to put him was a psychiatric hospital, not a concentration camp. The Sechevka prison for the criminally insane is an 8-hour round-trip drive from Moscow. Jane, Carolyn, Boris, Susan, and two news crews, NBC News Moscow and Wisconsin Public Television, pile into a van in the early morning hours. Sechevka opened in 1956 as a KGB special psychiatric prison. Bob Reynolds' plane was shot down in 1950. It's not clear where he might have been kept prior to Sechevka, but Jane Reynolds Howard has come here to see for herself where Provalov says her husband was kept in 1958. She is met by the chief doctor, Mikhail Fedorov.
This is one of the American magazines that's very widely widely read, People magazine. And in the issue that came out after President Yeltsin was in the United States, and this is my husband who was here at Sechevka in 1958 as a young man and as he would look today if he is alive.
Очень приятное лицо, но тем не менее.
It's a face that he's never seen in the course of his work here.
Oh, I'm sure he's too young.
Nice face.
He's much too young. But I guess what I hope in one way is that we will get a little bit of insight into his circumstances while he was alive, assuming that he may not be, or where he might possibly have gone.
Это граждане СССР, да. Были литовцы, так, были латыши, дальше эстонцы.
He was very interested in the archives and the patient files and the patient histories, and he went through a lot of them and did a lot of research, and he never came across any foreigners.
People from other countries were, especially Americans, were given other names in some cases, which would have been not necessarily a Russianized version of their own name, but maybe a completely different name so that they couldn't be traced in the files.
Dr. Fedorov says that if names were changed, that was done before the patients came to Sechevka. Patients arrive with a file and a biography from wherever they were before coming here.
I think one of the things that I want to explain to him is that I don't put all of my faith in a paper chase trail.
Dr. Fedorov responds that he can't believe a patient wouldn't eventually tell the doctor on staff who he really is, that at some point the doctor would have to know he was American.
Well, with all due respect to him and the way he runs this place now, I think he should be aware of the fact that this hospital back in 1958 and a few years following it had an international reputation for being not the most happy place to be in, and the doctors were not necessarily motivated by the highest intentions, or at least they were following orders from above.
Поэтому я думаю, что все-таки такое состоялось бы.
That he said that thank God that time is now in the past,
yeah,
and the structure has recently fallen. So, if a doctor who kept quiet in those years knows about that, why hasn't he come forward now and said?
He might be dead.
Может быть, уже умер. Doesn't. Why hasn't he come forward? And
or he may be elsewhere, so far away from here.
Может быть, в другом месте, далеко.
Я имею в виду, это гипотез, поэтому мы не будем.
All hypotheses, so it's
all hypothetical. Now, except that I have a very strong feeling that Bob might be alive, and I have to find him if he is.
Boris Yuzin then tries to explain to the doctor that even to this day, people in hospitals can be so fearful of repercussions that they won't come forward with information. Fedorov says that all of the personal files from 1956 to 1978 have all been moved to a central archival location in a branch of the Ministry of Interior. The doctor says he doesn't know whether or not those files are stored somewhere or destroyed. He says he does have history of illness files from 1956 through 1958, but there are no photos in those files. There are several reasons why a search of Russian archives is difficult. Here at Sechevka, the main card catalog is in alphabetical order by last name. The problem is American names could have been changed to Russian, making it almost impossible to track. Also, the cards can easily be removed, never to return. After looking at the records, the group walks to a unit of the hospital where patients who are on heavy medication are kept. Most of the patients are younger, under 35. Reynolds Howard looks for any older patients who might remember her husband.
Do any of you remember? He would be 70 now. Explain, this is the way he looked at 29. This is the way he looked at 29. This is my daughter and Bob Reynolds' daughter. So she's looking for her father, and I'm looking for my husband.
Вот
Спасибо.
Нет, завтра там у меня встреча.
Next up, a place called the workshop. Dr. Fedorov and Yuzin select a few of the patients and bring them into a room to meet Reynolds Howard.
Джейн Рейнольдс и ее дочка Кэролин.
Ну, может быть, кто-то из вас слышал, скажем, от друзей своих или на этапах, других больницах. Старая больная, мы стараемся среди того, кто здесь присутствует, пригласить вас.
Знаете, наверное, что было сообщение Ельцина о том, что в 50-х годах было 4 американца.
No one appeared to recognize the photo of Bob Reynolds. Dr. Fedorov has agreed to talk to each patient in the hospital and show them the Reynolds photo. Then he will write to Boris Yuzin with the results.
Thank you.
Yeah, to everybody, thanks.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Спасибо.
Well, pay attention.
As Dr. Fedorov hustles everyone to the next location, Carolyn lags behind.
I don't know what I feel. I'm compelled to keep coming back here. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what it is. It's just this gut feeling that I can't leave. It's like I have this need to look at everyone. That if my father was indeed a prisoner here, I'm stepping on grounds he stepped on. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
When Carolyn finally catches up, she finds her mother talking to a nurse from the hospital. This nurse has worked at Sechevka since 1963.
Did any of the nurses or doctors that she came in contact with ever mention or that she know were they conscious of a tall, blue-eyed American?
Another nurse walks in. This one has worked at the hospital since 1956.
She has a good memory.
Mm-hmm.
And besides, at that time, there were just a few of them here, I mean, patients.
Да, но дело в том, что... Такой я фамилии не помню.
So she cannot recall the man with such a last name, Reynolds. Но...
Не знаю, я не могу сказать что-то положительное, потому что я не... Нет, в моей памяти нет.
From America! I live in Moscow!
When Reynolds Howard returns to Moscow, she meets with KGB information officer Yuri Kobyladze.
And I do happen to have a rather firm conviction that there's a good chance that my husband and some of his crew lived and are still alive even today.
I admire the, you know, the feeling of the ability of American people to trace down the destiny of every citizen. You know, I think that we have to learn from you. No, I would be very happy, man, if I could say that, look, we've got the information. You can imagine that, you know. But, you know, unfortunately, you realize that you're with the Foreign Intelligence Service, and as Intelligence Service, we had nothing to do with the, you know, shooting down the aircraft.
Oh, no, I know,
you
know that, yeah. I'm sure of that.
This is official document, mm-hmm. which was sent to Volkogonov's committee. Okay, so this is paragraph saying officially, you know, that we don't have anything in our archives as far as the problem of shot down aircrafts are concerned. And I can't really envisage that if this plane was shot down in this country, you know, and your husband and the crew was captured, you know, must be some documents, records, files.
So.
You know,
and in fact, that's why I asked to see you.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I was told that you probably, more than any other single person perhaps, would be able to reason where would this kind of knowledge be, where would that kind of knowledge be, that sort of thing.
So, if this plane was shot down, the documents must be with the Ministry of Defense.
Because it's... Think down, honey,
and then, of course, you know, Volkogonov's committee, this is very serious business, you know. This committee is controlled by the president, you know. Mm-hmm. And the all information from different ministries, you know, and different organizations coming to this committee, you know, this Joint American-Soviet Committee. And I know that Ministry of Security, the Ministry of Defense, and our, you know, intelligence service, we've got our representative there. Mm-hmm. And they're cooperating with Mr. Volkogonov. And, you know, I can't really, it's beyond my comprehension that anybody in this committee is lying to Mr. Volkogonov or to Mr. Toon.
I don't say I have made no allegation of anybody lying.
And then the KGB information officer makes a statement that sounds like an old Russian line about the gulag. If there is a man, there is a problem. If there is no man, then there is no problem.
If they were captured, you know, I can't really, it's impossible, it's out of question, there must be documents. But if they don't exist, these documents, if Volkogonov's committee is saying, look, we checked with Ministry of Defense, we checked with Ministry of Security, we checked with Russian intelligence service, we checked with Ministry of Foreign Affairs, we didn't find anything, then it didn't happen.
In other words, no paper, no prisoner, no problem. As they say goodbye, Kobyladze turns to Carolyn.
I'm very pessimistic.
This is another here. The Iron Project in Moscow here.
So I'll keep my fingers crossed, maybe.
Jane Reynolds Howard's journey continues. She boards a late-night train headed for Riga, Latvia. An interview with a retired Russian general awaits her there.
I don't suppose he will know anything about where your father would be at this point or anything like that, but even if it gives us a few leads to follow down and something.
Hi.
On the way to Riga, Carolyn reflects on her visit to Sechevka.
Well, when we were going through the wards where the men were sedated, that was the part that was the saddest. And I remember going from room to room and looking through the windows and looking in to the cells and imagining whether my father had been there and been through that situation and at some point been in a bed like that with that terrible despair in there, that look in their eyes. The first time I went back to the gate, and I couldn't pull myself away, I had to go back. I stood there at the gate looking at all the different men. There must have been 100 of them there. And they were looking at me. And some of them spoke English, a few words of English. And some of them asked for cigarettes, things like that. But while I was standing there, one of the men passed me a note, which I immediately put in my pocket, and then later opened it up and looked at it. It was written in Russian, and later I gave it to a translator, and he said that what was written down there was information concerning two people that were in there and that had been put in there for political reasons, not for sickness. About a month ago, I had a dream that I was already here in Russia with my mother, and we were walking through what seemed like a combination of prison and hospital. And we ran into my father in a cell, and he was down on the floor, and he was old and curled up in fetal position. He was alive. He was not in good shape, but he was alive. And at that point, the dream ended, so there was no conclusion to it. So I don't know whether it was just a product of my imagination because of the intense fear that I've been under and the anxiety of everything, or whether the dream was a message of that, I don't know.
Were you thinking about that dream yesterday as you walked around Sochevka?
I was looking for something. I was looking for something in someone's face.
I feel very good about going to Sochevka because until yesterday I had only a negative feeling about Sochevka. I knew only the part about when it was a KGB hospital that, you know, used drugs and so forth on the prisoners, and that was back during the time when Bob was there. I guess I was trying to absorb a little bit of the feeling of the place. I realize it's changed since the time that Bob was there. A lot of those buildings weren't even built at that time, but I came across a bough of evergreen, and I picked a piece off of it to take home with me as a remembrance of the place. I don't know what made me do it, but it was a part of nature, and I know Bob loved the outdoors and loved farming and so forth, and loved just walking in the woods and things like that. And I thought, who knows, maybe the tree that came from was in existence when he was there. Probably a long shot wish, but.
Tomorrow in Riga, Jane Reynolds Howard will talk with General Fedor Shinkarenko.
The general says that he is the person who gave the order for Bob's plane to be shot down. I want to find out, if I can, whether this was policy that came down from Joe Stalin, which I assume it was. I want to reiterate what I said in my letter to him, that I have never had any hard feelings against the Russian people or even people in the military and so forth who had to follow orders that they might not have liked to have followed.
А вас я принимаю с удовольствием, а теперь представляю вот жена.
He said that what happened, a pilot wasn't guilty of, you're not guilty of, a daughter isn't guilty of, it's governments.
Before going into the details of the privateer incident, General Shinkarenko wants to give a little background. He states that on February 23, 1950, three American planes flew over the Baltic states.
Moscow looked at all these reports of planes coming over and made the decision that evening of February 23rd that they had to do something to stop the flights, and gave the order to all pilots that were going up to signal these planes to come down to open fire.
The new order was to open fire if American planes did not respond to signals to land. These orders were good only for planes that were flying over Soviet territory, not international waters, according to the general.
He said the planes flew over Latvia, they flew over the city, so they didn't just fly over here, they flew over Leningrad, they flew over Minsk, they flew over Kiev, over the cities themselves, that far inland, that they even flew over Sverdlovsk, which is right in the heart of Russia.
As a result of these flights over Soviet territory, General Shinkarenko said that he was ordered to develop a crack group of his best pilots to protect against border offenses. He was the commander of the special force, formed near the end of March 1950.
And then 6 a.m. on the morning of April 8th, the weather was very bad. The Baltic Sea was covered with fog. There were huge waves. It was very rough seas. And he was called up to the central office, and on the radar saw that a plane crossed from West Germany through the neutral waters and entered the territorial waters of the Soviet Union.
Садиться под Москвою в Клин, точка Ленин. Там погода получше была.
It got to the point where they had to do something about the intruding plane.
As the general tells his story, there appears to be some confusion about what type of plane was shot down.
He wants to check and see, was it a B-29?
No, it was not. It was a Navy plane, and Andrei Vyshinsky indicated that to Admiral Kirk the next morning and called him on the carpet about it.
То министерство все начали переписку как об B-29.
The pilots at first thought it was a B-29, but he thought it was a Navy plane. And
it was a Navy plane.
Some of the people thought it was a B-29, and in memos they were getting it confused in communications that it was a B-29.
I'm not questioning what he is saying. I'm simply trying to find where between what I've been told and what he knows. I'm trying to get at the truth somewhere.
Ну вот. Когда взлетели наши истребители, вышли за облака, передали, что видят нарушители.
When the planes broke through the cloud cover, they sent a signal back to the base that they saw the plane.
Это в 30 километрах от берега.
В сторону Советского Союза?
Ну, конечно, в сторону Союза.
That when they saw the plane, when they made contact, with the plane, it was 30 kilometers inland over a city. The Soviet pilots flew alongside the American plane, gave the signal for it to land, and instead of obeying the signal and landing, the American plane turned towards the sea and increased speed.
Развалился уже в облаках или нет, сказать никто не может с летчиков. Ни один не может сказать.
That they gave one more last warning and signal for the plane to land, and the American pilots ignored the signal. So the Soviet planes fired on the American plane. It burnt very quickly and fell into the cloud cover. And none of the Soviet pilots can tell exactly what happened between when it hit the cloud cover and when it hit the water. All they can say is when they fired on it, it caught fire very quickly and burnt very quickly and fell into the cloud cover.
The weather had cleared enough to allow the Soviet fighter planes to land at their home base. He then called the commander of the Baltic Fleet and asked that ships be sent to the area where the plane went down. But the weather was far too rough.
So they continued with their paperwork following the storm and reported to Moscow that they had shot down a B-29.
Reynolds Howard asks again what time the shootdown occurred.
Down. He said probably around 10 o'clock in the morning.
But the time Reynolds Howard has from government documents is 5:30 Moscow time, a difference of 7.5 hours.
That's not correct. That can't be correct.
The Soviets began the search efforts the next day. The general wasn't involved in the search, but kept up on the progress.
An admiral from general headquarters came and told him he had to find the wreckage, remove it from the water, and have something to show the General Secretary of the UN, who was on his way to Moscow.
The The Soviets were going to show the United Nations the plane's wreckage, tell the world what the U.S. was doing to embarrass the United States.
He then ran into the commander of the Baltic Air Force a short while later and asked him what happened, how did it work out in the end. He said, well, we found the plane and we've brought it ashore, but we're no longer showing it to the UN. We're not bringing the General Secretary here to see it. We found something very secret on it, and we're not showing it to anyone, and that's the end of the discussion. And it's difficult for him to say then if the plane broke up while it was still in the air, or if it broke up after it fell in the water.
Печально, но погибли.
They all died.
Никаких.
He said that there were no survivors, that if there had been survivors after the search was carried out, or if they had found any remains, they found no bodies at all, they found no remains. The storm was too bad, and they were all carried far away from the plane, and they didn't find anything at all. If he had found something, he would tell us about it now, and if they had found something, it would have gone through him.
Frankly, I have found that my government oftentimes is in, shall we say, lack of communication one part with another. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. So there are so many conflicting reports of different kinds. When I'm seeking on Carolyn, I think right now that we're trying to put the pieces of the whole mystery puzzle together to try to figure out, thank you, honey, to try to figure out what actually did happen.
Вот там, где они говорят, в лагерях.
He said that's why he contacted you, that's why he got in touch with you, that's why he wanted to speak with you in person, to tell you the truth.
Reynolds Howard politely suggests that the KGB or the Border Patrol could have captured the crew without the general's knowledge.
If there had even been one survivor, one live pilot from that plane, he would have been happy for the families, for the people waiting at home. And he also said that person would have been used for propaganda purposes, because there's no reason he would have been put on television, he would have been paraded around. If they had found even one living person, they would have used him at that time. The witnesses that you have in the various reports, he said, have you found anyone that can tell you that they personally saw a first-hand account of one of these crew members? Is there any single first-hand account that you've come across of anybody saying that they've seen the crew members? That's what he would like to know.
No first-hand accounts, but that doesn't mean that I discredit second-hand ones. I can't necessarily accept the idea that the plane just, blew up in midair, and everyone was lost, because actually he didn't see the plane hit the water. He doesn't know what happened to it then.
Никакой КГБ никуда не взял бы его.
He said that if there were a pilot that were alive, the pilot would have gone through him. And if the KGB were to take a pilot like that from that plane, they would have taken it from him, from his hands.
And he wasn't out on the water with the ship that was taking the men off.
Поднятие боевой готовности очень положительную роль.
Said what he can say is the leadership wanted the plane found, wanted the plane brought out of the water. And he can say that when they did bring the plane up from the water, that the technology they found on the plane played a very significant role in dramatically increasing their defense capabilities for the borders of the Soviet Union.
General Shinkarenko says that it was Joseph Stalin himself who wanted the plane found, and everything was done to Stalin's orders.
А вот последний раз, 28 апреля,
the Before heading back to Moscow, Jane Reynolds Howard has time to visit the Latvian coast, the Baltic Sea, where the privateer plane went down. She and Carolyn are still reflecting on what the general had to say.
And the timing of it, when they say they shot it down and so forth, and the timing that the all the records that I've encountered are off by several hours. I realize that for every episode that happens and there are people involved in it or near it, we get a different story from every person. So I think we still have a way to dig before we begin to get at the truth of this.
Carolyn vividly remembers the general's words, "No survivors."
I thought I was going to faint. It was about that point that I had to get up and go get something to drink. And other than that, I don't know what to tell you. Because I don't know if that's the end of it or not. You know, and if you did die in the crash, then there's no way of even finding the remains. And if that's not the truth, which my mother evidently feels it isn't, means that this thing goes on. It's hard to know what's truth and what's fact and what's fiction. You know, 42 years later. So I don't know. I don't know how. It's probably going to be a while before I'm able to process everything here and know what I truly feel about everything. And it's nice to know that if my father did die here, I know where it is, at least. After 2 weeks in Russia, Wisconsin Public Television said goodbye to Jane Reynolds Howard. Carolyn left soon after. Her mother would continue her search for another 8 weeks. Before we left, we asked Jane Reynolds Howard to reflect on her meeting with Yuri Kopaladze, who told her that there were no documents pertaining to Bob Reynolds in the KGB archives.
He wants, obviously, to give me the impression that Volkogonov's committee and so forth have the full backing of the president, which I know they do, and that there's no reason for anyone to hold back any information. But I think his statement doesn't take into consideration the fact that even in the United States it's common knowledge that there are people from the KGB, the old KGB, who today are not very anxious to cooperate with President Yeltsin. There are certainly hardline communists still around who are very unhappy at what Yeltsin is doing. They would like to see someone else in power, so I don't think they have the best of motivation to cooperate.
We asked her about General Shinkarenko, who insisted that there were no survivors from the privateer. He did claim that the Soviets salvaged the electronic equipment, which seems to back up the U.S. Navy memo, which says the same thing. But what about the crew? The general's confusion over the time of the shootdown and the type of plane makes Jane Reynolds Howard wonder how much the general really knows.
And it just doesn't all jibe. There are still a lot of things to be found out. And so I'm not accepting his version that Bob died after the plane was shot, because if he only saw it going down into the cloud cover, never saw it hit the water or anything like that, it's not proof to me that they're dead.
So the search continues, a search that includes U.S. government documents that suggest some of the crew of the privateer survived. To John Noble's claim in 1955 that 8 of the 10 privateer crew members were imprisoned in the Soviet labor camp at Vorkuta. To Igor Provalov's claim that Bob Reynolds was at the Soviet psychiatric hospital Sychevka in 1958. After 1958, the trail grows cold. Time is a factor in this 42-year-old mystery. In the end, Jane Reynolds Howard may never find in Russia what she's looking for, a live POW, or that one piece of paper with Bob Reynolds' name on it, or a marked gravesite. Yet she says she's not deterred by the lack of evidence or the slow pace of discovery.
We're a little ways along in a process that's going to take perhaps some time into the future. I would hope that there would be some answers within a few months, but if they're not, I'll be back here next year.
The preceding program was made possible by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting through the Central Educational Network, with additional support from Carlson Travel Network in Madison.